now from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey there, everybody. Happy Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday to you. Happy Sports Daily to you. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here. Max Power in producing. And we got a fun show for you as we've made our way through the Major League Baseball All-Star festivities. We end it with quite a bang last night. Is a swing-off better than home field being determined in the World Series when the All-Star game ends in a tie? I think we all have our answer to that as we get a swing-off last night. That was a lot of fun. We get major news for the Chiefs yesterday with Trey Smith. We'll discuss that at length today. We do not have Shreya Slada. He is on vacation, so we'll table that for next week. All kinds of good stuff, though, for you on this program, and we're excited for it. We'll give away some HTO as well today. It's all coming for you. What's on tap? Brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company. Locations east, west, and historic Delano featuring a rooftop deck. Wichita Brewing Company pizza and beer made here. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
A little sleepy this morning. It was a late night last night with the All-Star game going into that swing-off, but it was totally worth it. I'm paying the price this morning, but it was a fun night last night.
Yeah, so if you missed it at home, the game ends in a tie. And if you'll recall, the game ending in a tie is how we got years of home field advantage being determined because baseball thought we were really upset that the All-Star game ended in a tie. I don't remember being upset. I do remember thinking, well, that's an interesting idea, not having a problem with it. And then over time it played out and you're like, yeah, that shouldn't be the case because you might have like an opposing manager involved and all these things. So then they finally do away with that. I don't think anybody lost anything out of the All-Star game. The swing off though was great. Raise your hand if you knew that this was the tiebreaker, if there even was a tiebreaker.
I had no idea until it was actually getting ready to start.
Nobody did. Nobody had any clue.
The players didn't even know that that was what the tiebreaker was in some cases.
It felt like they just made it up on the spot. Like, you know what? Let's have a swing off. I don't think Aaron Boone knew that there was going to be a tiebreaker because he had Aranda come in as his anchor leg, a dude that over the last four Major League Baseball seasons has 21 home runs. Yeah, you know what, Yankee fans, I get it. I've never totally understood all the Aaron Boone, hate because they've had some success, but I get it.
You understand it now.
Yeah. Randy Rosarena. You got your dude sitting. I get it. Aaron Judge probably was like gone. Bobby Witt Jr. sitting right there, bro. Like, what are we doing? Probably he's like, you know what? Who is in no danger of like me getting a phone call from their manager of like, what are you doing putting that dude in the Derby? Maybe Aranda was the safe play there. But Kyle Schwarber, man, there's never been a dude built for that more than Kyle Schwarber. And then they were going to anchor. If Pete Alonso came up, he was going to hit 2 or 3-2 because he's like the Derby King. Man, that was fun though. And Schwarber's moment was bigger than anything else that happened in the game. Probably anything else that happened the entire All-Star break. But that was pretty cool. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, and you know, as a Braves fan, Kyle Schwarber, as a member of the Phillies, has broken the Braves' heart multiple times over the years and in that stadium. I mean, he's familiar with hitting bombs in that stadium for sure. I got to tell you, from day one, I was never a fan of home field advantage being determined by the All-Star game, and it was for a couple of the reasons you mentioned, but also the fact that you've got players on teams that are nowhere near sniffing the playoffs entirely, and for the teams that were in first place and are contenders, their hopes and dreams of having home field advantage rests on the shoulders of players that have no interest in the play. Like, they're not even close to the playoffs. So that never made sense to me, that you're taking an exhibition game that's meant to be fun and you're slapping stakes on it. I never liked that at all. And I thought that there were other ways that different things should be determined. So when I remember hearing that they were taking that part of it away, and I was really happy because from day one, I'm like, I'm not a fan of this. Like, let's just keep it fun. Let's keep it an exhibition. It's okay. There doesn't have to be strings attached to everything.
Yeah, I agree. It just, we look, It's a fun event. Baseball's always got the advantage of there's nothing else going on. They can play the game at 100% speed and it doesn't change anything. You know, there used to be more of an American League, National League, very real rivalry because they didn't ever play each other. That's not the case as much anymore, but it's fun. I mean, it's a fun event. The Home Run Derby is great. The game is good. As for a quick recap of the Royals involved in the game, Michael Garcia did get in and he had a run scored. So that was nice to see him get into the game. He had a walk.
Bobby Witt Jr. drove him in. That's the first time I think that's happened, where a Royal has driven in another Royal when there have been two or more in the All-Star game.
And it was Bobby Witt Jr. with that hit, scoring two runs that put the American League in a position. Then, of course, he scored the game tying run. So very involved there. Chris Bubich very involved in the wrong way. He gave up a big home run. He had the most damage done to him of any pitcher in the All-Star game, three earned runs. And then Estevez was pretty good. Not pretty good, really good.
Really
he allowed
good.
A hit, but he had three strikeouts in his inning. So pretty good, you know, relevant showing for the Royals in the game. More than I thought. I was talking to Brandon Zinner yesterday. I didn't think Michael Garcia was going to play. I thought Bubich probably would not pitch, although I should have thought about him being a lefty. And then I thought Estevez would probably get an inning and Witt would play.
Yeah, I thought that it overall was really a good showing for the Royals. And I know Chris Bubich gave up a home run. It wasn't a bad pitch, and it was Pete Alonso going opposite field. And that, you know, sort of thing is going to happen when you're facing the polar bear. So, you know, yeah, you would have loved to have a clean outing from Chris Bubich and then basically a flawless appearance for all four Royals. But the fact that all four of them got in and were represented in the game, there was definitely a lot of Kansas City flavor, and not just from the four players that were out there. Of course, Ryan O'Hearn, former Royal, started for the American League. Brent Rooker was all over the place. He's a guy that a lot of people forget played a little bit for the Royals a couple of years ago before they designated him for assignment. And he was in the swing off. He put the American League out into an early lead in that swing off. So a lot of Royals flavor from top to bottom in that All-Star game.
Yeah, it was great. It was a lot of fun, and we made it through. And now we get these couple of games to sit and stew. Or really, it's what do we get?
Couple of days, today, yeah.
Wednesday,
yeah.
It's Hawaiian shirt Wednesday, so yeah, we get Wednesday days. And Thursday to stew before we get back to the action. And we will discuss getting back to the action here on Sports Daily today as well. Let's do it right off the top. If you want to win some HTO today, you can do that right now by texting the keyword T to the short code 20357. That's T20357. You can enter this once per day. Message and data rates apply. It will get you a free cup of iced tea, any of the more than 25 flavors at East Wichita, West Wichita, or in Derby. And if you head out this weekend, Saturday, to West Wichita, you can get in on some Maine's Cousins Lobster food truck action. It will be there 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. So get out there and check out all the buzz around that food truck. We had a lengthy discussion about the merits of a variety of shellfish yesterday. It's lobster's shellfish, right?
It is.
It's classified as a shellfish.
It comes in a shell, so yeah.
Yeah, it has
a shell. That's usually the definition of a shellfish. If it comes in a shell,
it would be
a shellfish.
I just needed to make sure it was still classified in the same grouping as like a shrimp. But, yeah. You know, there we go. There it is. Good luck, everybody. We're going to come back. We got more Sports Daily. Don't go away.
time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are glad to be here with you on this Wednesday as we get ready to start the second half of the Major League Baseball season. We will look ahead for the Royals, continue to evaluate things as some big decisions are going to have to be made over the next couple of weeks. I want to say thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every day. It's great to have it on nights where you stay up too late watching All-Star games, which is what happens here. All right. Let's talk about the Trey Smith deal, Tommy. This is an interesting deal. No surprise that the Chiefs wanted to get this done. Trey Smith had sort of been hinting at it at times. I still am not 100% sold on making him the highest paid interior lineman in football. But I get it. He's one of the best players. He played 665 passing down snaps last year, Tommy, and didn't give up a sack. He is fantastic. He's awesome. Great story. Legendary off the field when you think about the horrible shooting situation at the parade where he took care of and helped save some kids. And like, I love Trey Smith. I just, for the Chiefs that don't run the ball, two highest paid interior linemen is a commitment. It's a big deal. Then I saw the structure of the deal, according to, I think Albert Breer had it, and it was like, oh, well, they front loaded it, which was smart, right? They put $27 million of the average annual value of $23 on the front year. That's going to help them now. That makes sense. But then Spotrac, however you pronounce the site that tracks all this stuff, they have it as the cap number being significantly larger next year than this year. And therein lies the problem of doing the deal in the way that they did it that I've been concerned with. It's going to cost you another player probably because they're way, way over the cap next year. So now I don't know how that's structured because you've got, on paper, it looks like, yeah, that's front loaded. That makes a lot of sense. Now they're going to get Trey Smith cheaper next year than they would have anyway. But then the cap number people say that's not the case. So I don't know how to track the cap stuff, but it's going to be expensive next year. It sounds like.
How many years have the Chiefs been over the cap number and they restructure things and they make it work like that?
They've got two high ticket free agents in particular coming up. Their list of free agents next year is a little more daunting.
But they're going to lose players in free agency and that sort of thing. Every team does. And the Chiefs do. Like they lost Justin Reed and they've had, other players, L'Jarius Sneed and other players in recent years that have walked away in free agency that the Chiefs have decided to not pay. I don't think a large cap hit has ever been prohibitive for not only the Chiefs, but really any team from getting a deal done that they want to get done, because there are always ways to restructure contracts and deals to get better and to get, under the cap. And so I think it's a smart move. I think it's good to lock him up. I was never in doubt that they were going to find a way to get something like this done. And they were able to make it happen right before the deadline. Trey Smith wanted to be there long term. The Chiefs wanted him there long term. I said it yesterday. It was telegraphed with the trade of Joe Tooney away that they were going to try to lock up their other guard, a younger guard, long term. And that's what they did.
Yeah. And look, next year they will have probably Travis Kelce coming off the books, Hollywood Brown coming off the books. Charles Omenihu is scheduled to, although I'm sure they'd like to keep him. You're going to have Kareem Hunt, Juju Smith-Schuster. A lot of players are coming off the books that will help. My point with bringing all of this up isn't, again, it's not anything again. I'm glad at the end of the day, I'm glad the Chiefs are keeping one of the best players in football. Like, don't get me wrong. And at the end of the day, I would rather have Trey Smith than, let's call it, George Karloftis, if that's what it comes down. It may not come down to that, but just as like of how highly I regard Trey Smith, I'm glad they have him. My only thing is like, And look, waiting until the offseason, the risk was it runs into potentially a left tackle deal down the road. But if you if you did the exact same deal, Tommy, at the end of this season, then your cap hit isn't next year, right? It would be the year if it's the exact same deal. So then you get the savings that they would potentially have this year, which it looks like they will, and apply it to next year. But they didn't want to wait that long. And you know, I don't think there was a holdout risk or anything like that. Trey Smith was on a big deal. He essentially gets that same deal stretched out over 4 years, three of them essentially guaranteed. And good for all parties, the Chiefs have Trey Smith. I have no issue with the deal. I think it's just, it's hard when you have players to keep them all. And the Chiefs have been doing a good job, obviously, of it for a long time. I think they've been drafting appropriately to absorb the blows of losing some of these players, as they always do. And they'll be great. They got Trey Smith. Now the interior line on the right side, maybe after this year when they lose all these passing weapons, they do decide to run the ball a little bit more. And then it's, you know, and then you're again allocating resources to the strength of your team. But keeping Patrick Mahomes upright, always a good strategy.
Absolutely. And I think that I would rather have, if you're going to debate Trey Smith or somebody else, I'd rather have Trey Smith than Joe Tooney. And I love Joe Tooney to death, and he's a Pro Bowl caliber player. Like, oh, but Trey Smith has more gas in the tank, and so and that's really what it, I think, came down to for me was, hey, they're trying to lock up a younger guy long term and move away from somebody that who was fantastic for the Chiefs, doesn't have it as many years left in the league. On top of that, if you want to talk about large contracts and cap hits and things like that, I would much rather have, I think everybody would much rather have a large contract for a guy like Trey Smith, even though he's on the interior, as opposed to a large contract for Juwan Taylor, who might be on the end, but Juwan Taylor's contract is massive and way overpaid and all of that. And so that was a swing and a miss by the Chiefs front office when they signed him. I think, you know, ultimately I'm okay with this. I get it. I understand the reasons why both sides wanted to do this. And regardless of what the Chiefs' game plan has historically been in the lack of running the ball, this was a smart move for them, and I have no objections to it.
Yeah, I don't. I'm good with it. And the other thing is too, if McDuffie and Karlaftis both just play out the final year of their contracts and don't do the "we'd command a contract before our contract is expired" thing that happens in the NFL, then that's not a problem because they're not on off, you know, they're not at risk until 27, technically speaking. The free agents next year, it's Charles Omenihue that you'd like to be able to keep, which they found a way to do this year. But almost all the other players, they're not going to like lose sleep. Isaiah Pacheco would be one that potentially comes off, but he's going to be a team friendly deal, I think, if the Chiefs keep him. Hopefully he's healthy this year and he commands a little more money. That would be good for the Chiefs, obviously, but it's all pushing it down the road. Trey Smith is awesome. Trey Smith needs to be a Chief forever. Like, all of that still applies. They've had a tremendous discount on him. He has earned his money. There's no question about any of that. And I'm glad the Chiefs have him. It's just, you know, you've got to keep doing this, and probably Mahomes restructures and they'll figure out a way to do it and they'll be fine. They'll be fine. Now, this year, when the only drama you've got in offseason is whether or not your right guard is willing to play on the tag or needs a new deal and he's not threatening a holdout, I would say that's as successful an offseason for the NFL as you can get. And as far as the drama department, the Chiefs just didn't have any. They didn't have any. You know, early in the offseason, it was interesting to watch them piece it all together, run it all back, and they've been drama free.
It's been nice.
That's exactly what you want to see.
It's been a while since we've had a drama free offseason for the Chiefs. And so it's been refreshing and nice to not have to worry about what's the next piece of drama that's going to happen.
Nothing. Hopefully everybody's about to be in training camp. Like, we've passed the danger zone. Unless somebody goes out in St. Joe and gets a little too rowdy on a Wednesday night. Like, I think we're to the point that we're in the good shape there. Camp starts next week. And here we go. And now it's all about football. And when it's all about football, Trey Smith's going to help you win football games. 665 snaps last year for the Pro Bowler without giving up a sack up the middle for a Mahomes that was sacked and under pressure plenty last season.
On top of that, he's been extremely durable in his career. And there's a reason why when the Chiefs drafted him,
all but one game.
There's a reason why when they drafted him, he fell to the round that they took him in because he had had injury concerns up to that point, right? But he's been very durable for the Chiefs over the course of his career. And, you know, what's that old cliche saying? The best ability is availability. He's been available, right? He's been by and large available during his time with the Chiefs. And when there was a revolving door at left tackle last season, there's been uncertainty at other areas on the line, right tackle, other places like that. It's going to be nice to know that you've at least got your center locked up in Creed Humphrey long term, and you've got your right guard in Trey Smith locked up, and you're not going to have to worry about, barring injury, any kind of revolving door there. Their abilities are there, and they're locked in for a long period of time, which is great.
Yeah, it's a good day to be a Chiefs fan. You get this awesome player, and he's going to be there now for maybe ever. As a Chief. And, you know, I think too, like if you had to list off the guys currently on the roster, of course, Patrick Mahomes, of course, Travis Kelce, of course, Chris Jones, as guys you'd like to see be Chiefs forever, Trey Smith's just as high as anybody on that list, isn't he? I mean, he's been the guy. And by the way, his injury issue doesn't it remind you of Josh Simmons a little bit?
It does.
You know,
he fell Smith in the draft all because of the injury concerns. Yeah.
Smith fell all the way to the sixth round. So it's a little different. But Simmons was that kind of talent too at a more premium position in the NFL. Boy, if he's healthy this year, I've had a hard time suppressing expectations a little bit, Tommy, because it's so early. But man, if Simmons can start at left tackle and just kind of be there and be healthy, it's going to be hard for me not to send this team back to the Super Bowl. I really like the Ravens this year, but what is there not to like about the Chiefs this year? It's the same team essentially as a year ago with very, very likely a much better offense than a year ago and very, very likely better to much better at the biggest area of need on the team a year ago. I'm having a hard time with not saying, you know what, here we go again. The Chiefs are going back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only question mark for me is what the defense looks like going into this year, that you don't have Justin Reed anymore. And so the secondary, you know, it wasn't like they made a bunch of, you know, or any really high profile free agent signings in the offseason on the defensive side of the ball. They're by and large relying on players that had been on the roster a season ago and, you know, to step in to Justin Reed's role on the defensive line outside of Chris Jones and Mike Dana. Like I have some questions there, but overall, yeah. I mean, like, look, they're about the same team as they were a year ago. And that team, you know, almost went all the way.
Yeah. They look, and the other teams have gotten better too. Ravens, for instance, same team, same offense, which was so prolific, but that defense that started to get really good by the end of the year last year because of all the young players, it's another year in now with a bunch of with more experience and more drafted players to make them talented. That's kind of the team for me just right now. Again, we're about to see training camp, but that's kind of the team for me where I'm like, this could be the year that they've, I mean, look at what happened to him last year. Mark Andrews doesn't catch the ball, whatever. Like, they were that close. If Derrick Henry is still the same player, and who are we to say he won't be? He's kind of a unicorn. That's the team to me right now that seems to be the most poised to stand in the way. You agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Bills, it's just the same Bills.
Yeah, it's the Bills, Josh, the Ravens.
Allen.
Yeah.
Nobody's better at beating Mahomes in general than Josh Allen. It just hasn't happened for them in the playoffs. Cincinnati, I mean, they would have to take a Herculean jump defensively with basically no changes on defense, so that seems unlikely. And then it's the Eagles, probably. Are there more than those four? I don't know. I really like the Rams. The Niners, I suppose, could come back, but they got a lot of injuries. They got a lot of older players. I think it's probably those four.
I like the Commanders. If you I think gave the Commanders those can four make a against run.
The field. I'm taking those four.
I like the Commanders. They're a team that, you know, right.
I see that. I think there's regression there coming.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I from what we saw from Jaden Daniels last year, sure, he could follow the same path as C.J. Stroud with Houston and take a step back in his second year. But with Dan Quinn there and the defensive mind that he's got and the fact that I think that they've surrounded him with a really good amount of talent with offensive weapons and that sort of thing, I do like them.
Yeah, they're right there. They're right there. I think they play in a pretty good division. I think, I don't know. I see them aggressing. We'll see. I hope I'm wrong, kind of. I mean, even as a Cowboys fan, I hope I'm wrong because I think Jaden Daniels is awesome, and I think Dan Quinn is awesome.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
We are glad to welcome in Wichita State Athletic Director Kevin Saul. Kevin, thanks for hanging with us there. A couple extra minutes, kind of had a in-betweener connection there. How are you this morning?
Oh, it's all good. Good morning, Jacob. How are you?
Good. So of all the things that you guys have dropping this week between a baseball tournament, a basketball tournament, softball announcements, I would say how's the summer, but I would suspect it's been pretty busy.
It has been pretty busy. You know, our external events group, Brad and the facility operations group do an awesome job with our external events, TBT, NBC, you know, AUSL, those guys do an awesome job with that. And then we've got a lot of the other department that's wrapped up in recruiting and retention and budgeting and all the things that occupy our time in the summer. We've had men's, women's basketball and volleyball on campus that have been practicing, and we're navigating the new CAPS and NIL Go systems that are a part of the house settlement. Fundraising, trying to sell season tickets. So it's been a busy summer.
Let's talk a little bit, Kevin, about the big news over the last 24 hours or so that Sydney McKinney is coming back to Wichita State as a graduate assistant. And you know, obviously she's, you know, played some pro softball and continued her career after her time at Wichita State. But having somebody that's a legend like her and the impact that she's made on that softball program coming back and now working with the players, what's the importance? How important is that to have her on staff?
Well, you know, Tommy, I think all three of us understand, everybody understands, anytime you can bring back a consensus All-American that is an unbelievable human being as a person into your program, there's limitless benefits to that. So she understands how Christy wants to play the game, so it's another voice. She's truly a authentic and genuine human being that our student athletes will have tremendous benefit from just being around and listening. She's got an incredible work ethic. She's achieved at the highest levels of softball. I don't know what more you could ask for in terms of an individual joining your program. So when we found out a couple weeks ago that was happening, we were ecstatic.
Yeah, it's just great news. One of the true legendary shockers of the last generation. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Kevin, before we preview the events you guys have coming this week and talk about men's basketball and what you're seeing specifically, I do want to bring up the hot item news in college sports lately has been potential expansion of the NCAA tournament, maybe by as many as six or eight teams. When you hear that, like where does your initial reaction fall with that kind of a conversation, which is a bit of a lightning rod among fans?
Yeah, I think the initial thoughts for me, and again, everybody comes to the conversation with biased thoughts, right? Based on your journey and your background and your experience. So obviously working 27 years in athletics, I think a couple of different things. Number one, it's more opportunities for young people to be a part of a really special event. I can see the flip side of that coin where folks think, man, it might get a little bit watered down if you've got too many teams there. But I do see student athlete opportunity. That's a really special time. Having been a part of numerous ones of those and three Final Fours, man, it's an unbelievable time for young people. So there is that perspective. And then you also think about it from an access perspective is, you know, are those going truly to the best teams and how are the best teams being evaluated, right? So the window itself gets bigger, but still you're concerned about how you walk through that window and get the invitation. And then you think about it financially. From my perspective, again, taking into account the first two elements, you know, if it doesn't result in additional dollars that are distributed, I'm not sure the true benefit of that. But at the end of the day, you know, the NCAA, Danny Gabbett and his team do an unbelievable job with the basketball tournament. Joanne Scott, I've known those guys for 10, 15 years. They do a great job. And obviously CBS and Turner Sports do a fantastic job broadcasting it. But we'll see what they come up with. At the end of the day, I think it can be a positive.
Kevin, I got to ask you, too, the big news over the last few days. I know we're a couple of weeks now into the House settlement and all the deals with NIL and everything like that that has kind of come to pass. But there has been nationally discussion about this valid business purpose part yep. of the settlement and everything with NIL and how collectives play into that role and everything. Are you guys seeing a lot of that at Wichita State now, or is that something that you've not yet experienced?
Yeah, we don't have a tremendous amount of commercial NIL activity at Wichita State. We have some, but we don't have a significant amount, and the deals are not to the magnitude of what you're reading nationally. At the same time, I do think that you're seeing some discord about the system being tamped down a little bit, right? This unwieldy distribution of dollars for what would appear to be non-business, true business purposes over the last 3 to 4 years is getting tamped down. And so, you know, the House settlement plaintiffs' attorneys are certainly speaking their mind, and the new Collegiate Sports Commission is certainly speaking their mind that they're acting on behalf of what's in the House settlement. But you are seeing some commercial NIL deals get denied in the NIL Go system for an evaluation that basically they don't hold a valid business purpose that is beneficial to the general public in terms of trading goods and services, and just simply distributing money from a collective to a young person is not a valid business purpose. So based on what I hear from our fan base and some of the discord about where athletics is right now, I would think most folks would look at that tamping down and the discord that's come from it as a positive.
Well, and you know, I would think that if that's the case and it gets more into the other side on the university control, that doesn't that lend itself a little bit to advantage Shockers in men's and potentially women's basketball, which I wanted to ask you about too, in the revenue share model without football, right? Yep. If there's more directed that way, then that creates the advantage versus, you know, X big SEC school still manipulating. I just don't know how it's enforceable, though. Do you think it's enforceable?
Well, at the end of the day, I don't think any rule book or regulations enforcement entity can truly stop a wrongdoer from finding a way to do wrong, right? At the end of the day, I don't know that there's any system that can't be cheated or at least attempted. But at the end of the day, we've got to a spot in our industry where we really need to coalesce together and follow the guidance and the rules in this settlement. Otherwise, you know, you risk some pretty detrimental outcomes for our industry. So at the end of the day, I think it truly is an advantage, guys. I think that's a great point, and it's one that we've talked about extensively here in the last month or so. Jacob, is as a Division I AAA entity, which is in short, as a non-football Division I institution, we are at a distinct advantage because we operate under the same $20.5 million cap that KU and K-State does, and we don't have to allocate the resources to our football program. We've seen in the NIL numbers that have been disclosed by ADs and CFOs in our league that we are at an advantage. We're seeing that their basketball numbers are going down from FY25 to FY26, while ours continue to go up. So that's another data point that's validating what we believe is that we will be at a distinct advantage. Guys, think about this. So what counts within the cap? It's additional scholarships above what we were doing last year. It's revenue share. It's also an educational funds. And so if any institution decides to enhance scholarships, that counts towards the $20.5 million cap. Any revenue share agreements count towards the $20.5 million cap, and any Alston educational funds count towards that $20.5 million cap. And so you've got institutions that are going to butt up against that $20.5 million cap because they're trying to figure out a way to maximize what they're doing in football. And in some cases, even publicly stated, have said 75 to 80% of our cap number is going to go to football, which only leaves about 15, 10, 12% for men's basketball. So you can do the numbers and the math on 20.5%. If you're at a Division I AAA institution, whether it's Wichita State or the Big East or whatever the case may be, and you're still operating under a $20.5 million cap and you don't have the massive football to feed, you are at a distinct advantage.
Pardon my ignorance on this, Kevin. I am curious about this, and maybe there's a reason that I am just completely not thinking about. But with all of these changes and everything, and with the fact that now you've got collectives that are being denied deals because they're not quote unquote valid business reasons or valid business purposes, and then you've got revenue sharing from the university and all of that, is there still a large purpose long term for collectives?
Yeah, no, the answer, in my opinion, the answer is no.
Okay.
Wichita State. So just to walk you through the journey, Wichita State in July of 2021, when NIL was made permissible, just facts, again, not intending to be crass or blunt, basically did nothing for 9 months. And then Tyler and Timber and those guys came in and started up the Armchair Strategies, that collective, and certainly did some great work to support our student athletes in our program. And then that transitioned into the relationship with Blueprint Sports and the Wheat Shot Collective. But at the end of the day, we could, within reason, we could forecast that a lot of these deals were going to be denied. And the fact that revenue share was coming inside of athletic programs, you know, a year and a half ago, we started questioning, do we need a collective understanding where things were going? And so we've dissolved our relationship with our collective because we have the ability to do those things within the department.
Sure.
And many other universities have as well. But some of these collectives are incredibly lucrative collectives with large staffs that are receiving compensation and benefits and all those things, and they're independent business entities that haven't been dissolved. The relationship between the entity and the institution may have gotten dissolved, but at the end of the day, there's still collectives out there, and they're certainly frustrated about where the NIL Go system is headed.
Well, one more on that, Kevin, and then we can get people the info on the TBT. So the revenue share, all of this goes into the big pot of money. You guys had a huge challenge to raise some money last year. Yes, there's an advantage at the cap. Is Wichita State in a good position to reach the cap without football?
No, that'll be a tough haul for us, if I'm being blunt and transparent with you. Getting to $20.5 million without football at our place will be tough. But the real question to ask, Jacob, is can we get to a spot that puts us at a distinct competitive advantage against our football-playing peers within the American, and also in our regional and national aspirational peers, based on they're going to get 15% of that $20.5 million cap, right? So that's about $3 million, somewhere between three and four. Can we surpass those Power Four institutions on their $3 or $4 million that they're probably going to get for their internal revenue share for their men's basketball program? Absolutely.
There we go.
And we fully intend to do that. So at the end of the day, we feel like we're an advantage. We keep pushing. Our number has increased in the last two fiscal years, guys. Our number has increased 518%. So we see that this is an incredible priority for us. We're investing in it. Our community is investing in it. We've got some really exciting conversations that are going on right now to try to elevate that number into a competitive spot.
Love it. Love it. That's the goal for sure. And that those practices happening now, which we'll talk about another time, are going to be a big part of it, getting the Shockers into winning championships. Real quick, TBT starts Friday. I'm looking online. I see all session passes are sold out, but individual game tickets are still available, including for the Aftershocks Friday night, Kevin. Still plenty of chances to get out to Coke Arena.
Yeah, the Aftershocks play Friday night, and barring a win, they play again on Sunday. So just encourage folks to get out. It's typically been a pretty large walk-up crowd. But if you want to skip the lines, you can certainly call 316-978-FANS and get your tickets today. But just look forward to another great event. Friday night, it's always a great night, guys, because you have that first game with the Aftershocks. But it's also a special night for our program because we get all the basketball alumni back together. Ryan Hillard and Gretchen Torlein put in a really cool event where our current players get an opportunity to meet with all the alumni. So it's a great weekend.
Can't wait for it, Kevin. Thanks. We'll do it again in a couple of weeks. We'll be back with more Sports Daily.